I ask for the permission of reading a poem before each message and each service. And got to throw in an extra one before perhaps the best sermon I'll preach this week. That was the one this morning. To the son-in-law, you know, we're part of all things that we've met. And I was a part of that, weren't you? If you weren't a part of it when you got started, you were before you got through now. If you weren't, you were dead. We'll have your funeral one day this week. That was a blessing from God today, and I really like to brag on my family when they do that well. The Lord got a hold of things and really gave us a lift that we needed today. And I told him earlier when I was coming, I didn't realize that he was being somewhat affected by the same germ that I am. Since having a little sickness to develop, that I have become emotional more than I've been used to being. I always been able to be, well, affected by emotion. And I've always felt that if you didn't feel what you said, if you was a preacher, you had no business saying it. And you surely shouldn't expect anybody else to feel it. And I've heard enough of that kind until, honestly, take 20 of them to I can't remember that I'm not still in old Mississippi where I grew up. I started to say fatten a flea, but that's probably not as honorable as I ought to say in the lofty state of Michigan. So what would I say up here? I don't know. But anyway, not enough. All right, you don't have to tell how you live each day. You don't have to say if you work or play. A tried, true barometer serves an open place for however you live. It'll show in your face. Makeup won't cover it up, either will it. The false, the deceit that you bear in your heart will not stay inside where it first got a start. For sinew and blood are a thin veil of lace. And whatever you wear in your heart, you wear on your face. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. If your life is unselfish, if for others you live, for not what you get, but how much you can give, if you live close to God in His infinite grace, you don't have to tell it. Say it with me. It'll show in your face. Amen. Now, you know, if poems can be that inspiring as that is to me, and men write them of their own operation, I don't have to get all taken up wondering how God's Word can be divinely inspired and stir like it does anybody that'll expose themselves to it. It'll do it. I've said it here in this pulpit before, and I remember some things I've said. I'm getting that old age lapse or whatever it is we talk about. But I believe Dr. Jack Howell said one time he didn't mind getting old enough that he repeated himself and told the same story in the same sermon. Didn't mind that too much, but when he told it in the same paragraph, he said he kind of got concerned about that. So I know some of the things I've said, and I forgot a lot of them like you have, but if you heard them. But I do remember that I've said to you that God, in all of His wisdom and in all of His understanding of our human makeup, has no misgivings when it comes to what you and I pretend to be as compared with what you and I are. And we ought to be careful. But we can't deceive God. He's not mocked. Not only whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. But God is going to hold us accountable for what we are and what we do. All right. One thing I get to fudge on here a little is to throw in one more that preacher reminded me of in our conversation this afternoon. If you think you hear a lot of talk going on by two preachers when they're around in church, you ought to get with them when they're not around church and off to themselves. We just get to having a good time in the Lord. Don't you like to talk about it? I have a dear friend, couple friend in Heber Springs that we just love dearly. They seem to love us. But you know, I've quit kind of late wanting to be around after one little statement has been made about three or four times. The lady of the couple, after we're together a little while, we'll go to talking about things of the Lord. The man is 82 years old, and I'm nearly that much, just Leah. And so we... and we get talking about the things of the Lord over the years. And my wife tunes in a little, and this lady will tune in just a little bit. And then she kind of gets her cup full. I reckon about to get emotional or something. And she'll say, "Well, who's going to sing an invitation? We've already had the sermon. If you're going to sing one, sing it. If you're not, I'm going to take an offering, and we're going to rise and go home." Now, that's a good way in a way to handle it, but I said, "Well, now if it's bothering her, I don't want to dwell on those things that bother her, because I'm getting a blessing out of them. So if I'm bothering you now, I'll look down while you leave." I'd rather have a little rose from the garden of a friend than flowers strewn around my casket when my days on earth must end. I'd rather have a living smile from one I know is true than tears shed round my casket when this world I bid adieu. Bring me all the flowers today, whether pink or white or red. I'd rather have one blossom now than a truckload when I'm dead. Let's give it to each other. Let's share with each other in that. Preacher asked me, would I say a few words tonight about my physical condition. And I reckon he wanted that to be the sermon, and it could be. But I would try to make an explanation of something that I hadn't had very well explained to me. I thought I was healthy as a bulldog and ready to fight most anyway or any time under any condition, you know, just in the strength of health and all. I'd been well blessed, been very few times that I could consider myself sick. I'd fill out these blanks to give blood. I've given in the gallonage of blood. I forget now how many gallons of blood I've given a pint at a time across the years, and I've got a record of it somewhere there at the house. And I was enjoying doing that. One time I was turned down because my pulse beat was less than 50. And they said, "We can't take it." I said, "Well, check my, I'll get excited and you check it again." And she said, "Well, I'll do that, make you happy, but I'm afraid it's going to come out the same thing." And she didn't check it. And I really hadn't been happy since, but I didn't get to give any blood then. But I got tired of in getting ready to fill out those blanks, and I was thankful to the Lord, though, at the same time for it. I'd fill them out. "No, no, no. Have you ever had this? No, no, no. Do you have high blood pressure? No, no. Do you have anything wrong with your heart? No. Do you take any medicine? No. Do you have daily routine of medicine of any kind? No, 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 no. No, right on down." And I turn that in, and I say, they get to where they're bored reading mine that way. And I like that kind of boring, but I'm just healthy. And I got to thinking, this is, well, I'm healthy. Well, I don't know, after a little bit of a while, and you listen to this, because this is something that right now, and then you can turn me out when it gets to me, but this is something for you. You check your body thoroughly. I learned that melanoma, cancer, is a subtle, vicious, unrelenting thing. That's all you can call it, thing. And when it attacks, if it is not caught in time, then time is what you have little left of after it hits. And it's so unpainful to begin with. You don't know you got a thing wrong with you. I've been giving blood to folks. I almost want to get with the JWs and getting their persuasion, you know, the Jehovah false witnesses, and find out from, you know, whose blood is this, where'd it come from? I'm not going to take anybody else's blood. But I asked the doctor over and over. I said, now, they won't let me give anymore because you found cancer in me, and they don't want my blood. And I'd love to give. And he said, well, you can't. And they said, you can't. And I said, doctor, tell me. Tell me, doctor, is there any possibility that I have given anybody whatever I have in the way of cancer? Have somebody receiving my blood been polluted by it? Oh, he said, no, we've checked that kind of thing up one side, down the other. And to all we have of medical knowledge, you haven't had the slightest chance of transferring it that way. It's not transferred that way. Well, I said, that's one time. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I don't want to have anything that I've given somebody else that's going to hurt him, I'll tell you now. Unless it's preaching, and I'll hurt you every way I can preaching to get you to scream out, Lord, have mercy. Because he'll have mercy and cure whatever gets wrong with you. That I caused some preaching. And I know that. But I said to my wife, I keep noticing a spot back here on my shoulder. And I got trifocal glasses, and I get up here and I'm looking in here, and I get a mirror and I'm looking in here and up and down. I'm trying to see that spot on my back. Now, honey, you're going to have to look at it for me. Well, let me go get my glasses. Women, wear your glasses. My wife's worn out more shoes hunting glasses than she'd ever worn out glasses hunting shoes. And I said, get your glasses and look. And she'd look. And she'd say, well, we've been reading about melanoma in time past, and your cousin by law had melanoma on her leg, and this doesn't look a thing like that melanoma. It's just a black spot back there on your back, and it's not very large, and it's kind of puffed up. I think it's something back there and where you had a sebaceous cyst cut off your back, a little poop Jenny came up back there, and it showed through my shirt, and I went in and had the doctor to take it out way 3 or 4 years ago. And she said, I think it's right next to where that little scar is there, and I think there's not a thing in the world. Said he sent off that sebaceous cyst, and it was what do you call it when it's not cancerous, benign, and said that's probably just some little pimple. And I said, well, get a needle and pick it, and let's see if we can make it go down. I don't like it being there. No, I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to touch it. And she didn't. Well, it went by just a little bit, and it started getting a little bit larger. I'm drawing here, but it got about as big as that little fingernail across on the back. That's all. And I said, well, I passed a place in Heber Springs. It looks like it was a doctor's office in a upgraded barn. And maybe at one time as they're on the main drag, maybe at one time they sold boats or something in that building. They're on the lake and this doctor's moved in. Maybe he'll see a patient. You know, it's hard to get in to see those fellas. And so I said, I'll try to get in there. If they'll take me, I'm going to make an appointment. She said, well, all right. And I pulled in, went in, and I wasn't one that said anything to me, but the nurse said, yeah, we can work you in day after tomorrow. And you come back, and he'll see you. He's just here on Tuesday and Thursday. That's the only time the creek goes down far enough that he can get into where we live in Arkansas. And his brother wears his shoes the rest of the week, and he just has those 2 days he has them. And in Arkansas, I'm trying to be serious all the way, but you'd better let me have a little humor rather than have all tears in the story. So she said, you can see it. I said, well, I'll be back. And I went in to a fellow that I imagine he's about like this good-looking. Is he good-looking? Is he? Okay, I got it right then. On her word, he's good-looking, and I agree with that. Young man there with a white shirt on, just a young fella starting out in life, feeling his onions. And I said, young men for war and old men for counsel. And this boy's just, I'm not wanting to fight. And I'm in here for counsel. Maybe he wouldn't handle me. And he looked at it on the back. He said, yes, sir, we better get into that. And he put that little needle back there and then stuck it in. And I said, well, that didn't hurt. And he stuck it again. I said, well, that didn't hurt. I've had mosquitoes that could have caused a lot more pain than that injection. I thought he was about taking a little stuff and he was going to be through in a few minutes. I didn't feel anything. But he said, well, nurse, come sew this up. And he'd cut a nice little gash back on my back. And just before he said, nurse, sew it up, he had said to me, said, sir, I'm going to have to keep you there just where you are. Are you getting tired there? And I said, no. Keep you there just another few moments. That I didn't get deep enough to get everything I want to get. So I'm giving you another shot back there so I can go in a little deeper. And he went in and got that. And then he said, now, nurse, you can sew it up. And so I got busy and sewed it up. He turned around and looked at me and he said, I'd say from just my training standpoint, without a biopsy, that we've got a benign condition. But he said, I'd be lying. He said, my training tells me we've got a malignancy. And I'm not going to tell you to quote me on that until you check with the pathologist and he verifies that what I'm saying is true. He said, what we've been taught is to check melanomas, and if they're no thicker than a dime and go no deeper than a dime's thickness, he said, we can diagnose them pretty accurately that they are benign and they haven't gotten into the system and they got them in time. I said, well, mine wasn't any thicker than that, was it? Well, he said, four times I got out. But I'm lining you up to go to as fast as I can to go down to Little Rock, and we'll let you go to the clinic down there where they got some of the best in the world, and they're going to go back in there again. And I just know that what I see is that serious. And he said, I'm doing it. I said, Noel, don't do that, doctor. I said, don't call down there. I said, let's wait till we get the pathology report. He said, well, you're the ruler on it. You call the shots. And he said, I think it'd be wise to call because they have a list, waiting list, and said, I think we ought to get you on in there because you're going to have to go, in my opinion. I said, now listen, let me tell you a short story. I've been told years back one time that first time I was told I had cancer was by a doctor in Warren, Arkansas, when I was there years ago. years, not ancient years, but a long time ago. He took a picture of my lungs. He read the picture. He told his nurse to call me in. She called, and I went in out of the yard, and she said over the phone, said, "Mr. Colton." I said, "Yes." Said, "Bad news. Doctor's read your x-ray, and he says you got a mass in one of your lungs." And I said, "A mass? What's that?" She said, "That's a cancer." I said, "You said I've got cancer? Did he say that or you said it?" And she said, "We both said it, but he said with diagnosis you have a cancer." But he said, "Now, he wants to wait and let the radiologist read the picture before we make this final and do set up a operation." And I said, "Well, I never heard of somebody calling a person up and telling them after they've been into the office one time and examine them, they had cancer. I thought you sort of snuck that up on the blind side through the wife or tell one of the children it's a blabbermouth and they'll get around to letting you know about it. But you just here out and out told me that I had cancer." She said, "Well, that's what the doctor has taught me to do. That's what I've done. Hope I hadn't offended you." "Well, how would you like for somebody professional to just tell you, point blank, you have cancer? You're going to have to come in sooner or later and have a lung taken out because you got cancer in your lung." Well, I had it, and I prayed, and others were praying along who pray for me all the time. And I went on about my business. Sometime after that, telephone rang, same voice. "This Mr. Coulter?" I said, "It is." I like to be called Mr. Coulter every once in a while. I've been brother all through the years, and I feel kind of as good as these other guys when somebody calls me Mr. I never, you know, never resent that. "Mr. Coulter?" I said, "Yes, sir." Said, "Radiologist came through, and he studied carefully your printhead, your pictures. Got good news. He can't find a thing in the world wrong with your lung." Well, I said, "Praise God. I didn't have it when the other fellow thought I had it. God didn't erase the picture, so I'd go on through life without having a picture of it. He didn't have to erase the cancer because there wasn't one. I don't know what the doctor saw, but I went back to him some weeks later, and he said, 'Let's do so and so,' with reference to some little malady I had. And I said, 'Doc, let's hold up on that a little bit. You know, we were mistaken last time about my condition.' And I said, 'You about ready to retire, and it's possible that you won't have time to tend me if I need this little thing done now.' And so he said, 'Well, that's true,' but he said, 'I don't think we'd be mistaken this time. In fact, I'm going to tell you something, sir. I don't think I was mistaken the other time.' I said, 'My doctor telling me when he's fixing to retire that he thinks he's right and the pathologist, the radiologist is wrong, and we're going to accept the radiologist's opinion and not his.' He said, 'Well, he's the expert, so we'll just go that way.' Well, that was years ago, and I've lived without any lung trouble. I've had them pictured time and again since then and hadn't thing found. And then to make what I said is the long story a little shorter, and it will be mostly part of the sermon because I got it connected to this, so don't get too moved that lunch out yet. Where is it? I'm getting hungry. Right there? All right, hold it. I'll come get it in a minute before you get it. But I went on down, moved to Gulfport, Mississippi, and down there for a while in service for the Lord, I went in for a urology checkup and have a little problem, and I got this urologist. He checked me out and he took a picture. I just don't make good pictures. You can tell that from here up, but I don't make them anywhere to take them on me. And he took a picture of my kidneys. And when he got through, he said, "Well, I don't like what I see. And I'm going to schedule a couple of two or three more things before I say any more, but I'll be back in here in a minute and tell you what I see and what the reason I'm scheduling some more things, activities for you to come back. Well, he's just gone in just a matter of a moment or two, and he's back, and he sat down, pushed back from me, and looked at me, and he said, "Sir, we don't know each other. Don't know how long you've been carrying your problem, this, but you definitely have a cancer in your right kidney." I said, "Doctor, what are we going to do about it? What can you do? Going to cut out a little part of that?" Or, "No, part of it? My soul, no, we won't cut. We'll cut the whole kidney out. It's no doubt malign, malignant," and said, "we'll cut it all out. And besides that, you've got a pretty good-sized little cyst in your left kidney." And I said, "Well, I came in here because I was getting up so many times during the night to go to the bathroom, and now you scared me to where I don't reckon I'll ever go again." And he said, "Well, I'll give you some pills for that." Now, this was important to tell, as shady as it might sound. "I'll give you some pills for your condition you came in here for." And he prescribed pills. When I got him to the drugstore and got that prescription filled and got the pill, little bitty pill, just about like buckshot, little pills, but I put a good bottle of them and a big price on them. And I got to reading the little pamphlet that came with it. And you know what the pamphlet said in shirt sleeve English? That this is to relieve frequent urination. No. It said that this is given in order that we might have more frequent activity in your bladder and more elimination. I thought, "Well, thunder, I came here to stop all this getting up all night, and here I am, he's giving me something that's going to stop me, looks to me like." But anyway, to make that story end there, it all came back to this time when they said, "I'm sure that you have cancer, and we're going to make reservations for you." I said, "I've been duped twice, because I'll have you know you were the second time with your kidneys." He put me through a renal scan when the renal scan was made of my kidneys and bladder and all of that. Studied, I got to see the picture and everything on it. There was an empty, a little bag, hardly as big as that thumb, called a cyst in that left kidney. He put ultrasound on it, and the technician that was doing that said, "Not a thing in there." Said, "No echo, no, that's not a bit solid." Said, "They hadn't even got liquid in it. We'd have to pull some liquid if it did, in order to be sure it wasn't malignant." I said, "It hadn't got any liquid in it. It reacts on the ultrasound." And then he said, "There's nothing wrong with your right kidney." He said, "Picture right there, you can see it," you said, "just clear as it can be. I don't know what happened in the first picture, but you don't have anything wrong with your right kidney." So I said to this doctor, I said, "I've been told two times that I had cancer, and both times wasn't right. Now, I've died a slow death two times, just knowing that I was going on out of this world with cancer." And I said, "Let's wait a little while on this." And he said, "Well, we can wait 10 days. It'll take that long to get back the report." And buddy, when he got the report back, he called me in. He didn't have anybody telling me over the phone. I went in, and he looked at me. He said, "You got to get you an appointment and get it now." He said, "This has gone deep. How deep? We won't know till you go in and have another excision. And when you have that, that's cut out, then we might be able to tell you more accurately." Well, I went to Little Rock, and as soon as I could make an appointment down there, and they got it cleared in a few days, the Lord answered prayer there. Instead of months looked like, the way it had looked that it would be. Got down into one of the nicest fellows I ever been around for doctor, and he had been looking at my pathological or pathology report. And when I got in, he took his chair and pushed it back a little bit and said, "Sit down right there." And I sat down and said, "Get good and comfortable." I said, "I'm in the wrong place to get comfortable. I don't think there's such thing getting comfortable in the doctor's office. I'll just sit here for a few minutes, best I know how." And he chuckled a little bit, and then he said, "I'm going to talk to you straight. I believe you need it. I believe I owe it to you." And he said, "You got a serious condition. And it shows that cancer has gone way beyond what it should have been allowed to go. And you'll be easily recovered from it." And I said, "Well, Doc, did the doctor in Heber get it all?" He said, "I'm going to find that out in a few minutes when you tell me I can. I'm going back into your back with another operation, and I'm going to cut out some flesh this time and go in pretty deep, because we're going to try to get what is in there out best we can." But he said, that'll come in a minute. "I'm going to ask you to let me talk to you straight." I said, "Put it whatever you need to." He said, "Well, you got one of the worst cases that I've ever looked at since I've been in this position here." I said, "Doctor, it's not big enough to be that much to worry and bring that kind of a report." He said, "Well, that's just like the misconceptions those people have about these things. Said, we don't know hardly anything about them." But he said, "You didn't get this from the sunshine shining on your back. I don't mind you went without a shirt being fair complexion many times, did you?" I said, "I only, just a few times did I ever go totally bareback. And I loved water sports. And taught 100 youngins or more how to ski, but I never went in without a t-shirt or some kind of colored t-shirt on, because I'd blistered nothing flat. Very seldom ever get out in it." He said, "It doesn't make a difference about you where your body's exposed. Said these ultraviolet rays coming from the sun, they get into your system." And he leaned over and he said, "You know, we find a lot of these melanomas between people's toes. Sunshine never gets there. Sometimes I imagine he won't go ahead and say, 'I wish it did,' and get some of that odor out of there. But he didn't say that, I did. But he said, and then you listen. We find a lot of them in the genital area of a lot of kids and adults." Well, now, I know he's not been working in nudist colonies around, and so that area is not generally exposed, though a lot of women do their best to put clothes on in the summertime that serve almost to let sunshine get where it ought not get. But he said it gets into your system through open exposure, your face, your hands, anything that gets out in the sunshine. And said then it comes out most of the time, because a case as serious as yours, in the back part of a man, on his back somewhere. And then on the legs of women. And I looked startled, like you're looking. And he said, "No, I don't know why. No doctor knows why. But that's the way it does." I said, "Well, back to me on this." He said, "Yeah. You could be dead in a year from now real easily, what you got." And just paused about as long as I'm pausing here. And looked at me for my reaction, I reckon, as much as anything. I said, "Doc, why do you say that?" He said, "Well, because you need to know that. It's possible, and I could say likely, because if, like I said, yours is as bad as I've had since I've been doing this, and that's been a good number of years. If I had 100 patients, and they all had come into my office with melanoma problem, and they had the same degree of it that you've got, he said, I'd be willing to declare before God or anybody else that 70 of them would be dead in a year's time. Pretty good percentage. That's about the best grade I ever made going to school. 70, that's just a passing. And I thought, well, Doc, look, now I don't care about the immediacy of death. I've lived a long life, and God's been good to me. I've been a Christian, I imagine, 10, 15 years, long as you've been in this world. I've been in the kingdom of God. And I said, I'm ready to go home. If it's time to go, I'm ready to go. I said, I've retired, and I don't find any place where I feel at home. I tell you, if you're contemplating retirement, you hadn't done it, you'd turn your head around from that if you had to break your bones to do it. Be sure you're doing what you know you're right. I got out, let that be another story, but I said, I'm ready to go home. I just feel like if I live much longer, there won't be enough to have a funeral, because I can't get that many to come for pallbearers, you know. I just, all my friends have either died or dying and disabled and can't do, and this, that, and other, or else not friends anymore, or whatever. Well, he said, I know you're trying to be light about it, but that's defeating my purpose for telling you what I'm telling you. You need to get serious about this thing. Said, I'm a dermatologist, but I'm sending you just as soon as I can get you there to an oncologist. Aren't there some funny names in the medical field? And then preachers want to be called doctor. That's because I reckon we're so funny. Something strange about us. But one woman told a preacher friend of mine in Arkansas, said, I could tell you as a preacher, and he's preached too, and yonder's one over yonder. He said, how do you know these? That's right, you're right on all three counts. How do you know that? Oh, she said, I don't know. Because you look so simple, I reckon. Now, that's about the way it would be, that most of us. But now, where was I on it? Serious. Oh, he said, I'm wanting to get you to this oncologist. He'll be meeting you in Heber Springs. Not, you won't come back down here. He'll be in Heber Springs, and he'll have his equipment, and you get to him, and you let him. He won't be there now till we get a pathological report on this that I'm doing. Well, he went in with his surgery. He cut a 4-inch gash back there in the back, spread it wide open. He removed an inch of skin, 4 inches long, down my upper part of my shoulder there, and an inch wide out of there. And he went in and cut a cube of flesh out. He said just a fraction over an inch, a cube. That's an inch every way you look at it, out of there. And this said, you'll probably have a big hole back there in the back, but I pulled my shirt down last night or up or whichever way so that my daughter and son-in-law could see back there. If you women can sew like that, you ought to go into business. It's a beautiful job back there. I'm going to have a picture made of that, because I hadn't had a good picture made anywhere. And I had one made of that scar. I got something that's photographic. And get it. But he said, I'm waiting for that. And I want you to see that oncologist. Well, I went to that oncologist, and I could tell you a long story about that, but I'm telling you, this is what he said about my case. If you'll let me, I'll have you admitted to the clinic in Little Rock in the morning. In order for you to start what's commonly called hemotherapy. Some kind of fancy name. And starting chemical treatment of your body. I said, I've made a decision about that. I've been pastor too long. I've been around too many people who've taken that. And I've seen them suffer worse from that than they did from the cancer. And I said, I don't care for any now. I don't want it. You have the right to refuse it. And I can't tell you that you're making a mistake, because he said, our record of batting average is not up to what it ought to be. Where it does good as opposed to doing just harm and hurting. So he said, if I was where you are and you where I am and you told me I had to go and get under that endothelin chemical treatment, I'd say just the same thing you said. And I'm supposed to be the one promoting the use of it. I wouldn't take it either. But he said, now I was driving up here last week to Heber Springs, and I was looking, getting warmer weather, and the roadside here and there, and I passed those fields that are between here and down Little Rock. Now, what in the world? He's rambling worse than I do when I'm in the pulpit. And what's he talking about? Seeing fields. And he said, now you listen to me. I passed those fields, and they were all grown up with weeds, and looked like some strange bushes were out on them. Not a single one of them didn't have stubbles and all that all over them. And just, I said, well, that's kind of common for this part of Arkansas, isn't it? He said, yeah, very common. But he said, what I want to tell you is that I came up today, up here to Heber, to see you, and start this treatment. And he said, I didn't see what I'd seen before. I saw a fresh plowed disc under, cleaned off fields, just as pretty as you've ever seen on both sides of the highway. It's in different sections all along. Not a bush in sight. That's you. He said, now those fields look good. But he said, if somebody's not in there pretty soon as a farmer with some plows and some pre-merge and that kind of stuff, it won't be but just a short while when they'll get to looking worse than they did before they were ever plowed. And said, that's where you are. We're going to watch you. Every 2 weeks you're going to be under a scan with me, and every 2 months. And said, every month in between you're going to be in the dermatologist's office and he's going to be examining your outside. He'll make sure the outside looks right, and I'll make sure the best I can that the inside stays like those fresh plowed fields. Now, if they'll stay that way, we got it before it went too far into you to get into the lymph nodes and bring that death within the year's time. But if we don't keep it that way, then now, or, you know, maybe not in a year, maybe 3 years, maybe 7 years. Or he said, maybe full life expectancy. I said, Doc, you passed my full life expectancy on the number 3. I don't expect to go beyond 74, heavenly days. And that's where I'll be at that point. And he said, well, what I meant by that is that cancer wouldn't be what killed you. And I said, well, thank the Lord. But he said, wait a minute, let me go check. I haven't looked at that report yet from Dr. Dinehart, who made the cube cut out. And he got that, looked at it. He said, yeah, we got a clean field. What the pathologist says here, but he said, we don't know how deep it's gone. He said, we're going to have to stay right on it from now on. And said, you go ahead and live best you can, be as happy as you can, and be as positive as you can, and enjoy as much you can living That seems to be one of the best medicines that a cancer patient can have, is a dispositional turn of happiness. Well, you know what God said? That doeth good like a medicine. Merry heart doeth good like a medicine. Well, I don't have trouble having a little merriment. I like that all along the way. But when I talked to your pastor and called off coming up here for the revival, I was saying to him, I'm going to be under treatment at that time. I thought I might be under the loss hair type treatment, chemo, and all of that type stuff. So that didn't develop. And I called, talking with him again. I said, is the invitation still open? And he said, it's open. And the people had been praying for me. Well, some of you good, sweet people had gotten in touch with me collectively by one of those letters that helped to do what the doctor recommended. Have a gleeful and cheerful attitude. Because I know that your prayers were made pretty much the preacher this thing's turned out to be. And if they're that effective, hey, I got the right folks praying for me. And I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for it. Now, if you get the devil saying, hey, nothing to your prayers, you send him to me. You hear what I said? You send that scoundrel to me. I'll tell him a few things. You better let them alone. You'll get down into hell before you intend to. They ask God to send you to hell tomorrow. You better be ready to land there because you're on your way. Now, I don't say that to flatter you, but I have people like you other places too that I praise God for their togetherness in prayer. And isn't it wonderful that if you ask any two of you agree as touching any one thing on earth, you can ask whatsoever you will in my name, believing, and it shall be given unto you.